The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hey, I'm Nick Hallett.
I'm Fan Zidan.
You can listen to our Minnesota Wild podcast every week here on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
All right, back here live for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. This is episode number 15 on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network at Cold Omaha MN on Twitter. You can also find us on iTunes. Specifically, look up Midwest Swing, navigate past the St. Lunatics song, and you will find us. We would love to have a subscription from you if you are listening. That way you can get it directly downloaded to your mobile device or whatever you listen to podcasts with. This is, again, episode number 15. I'm joined, as always, by Andy Carlson at Andy Carlson Show on Twitter. Andy, just briefly here, how you doing?
I'm fantastic because it's the cup.
Well, and you're kind of getting into the belly of the beast with NFL draft stuff, too. Have you narrowed down which of the 10 receivers that you like that you want to see the Vikings grab, or are you still kind of hemming and hawing over that list?
Moritz Wilhelm Banninger, at this rate, is going to be the number one overall pick.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to look at these mock drafts that have been up, quite frankly. If you go to like Walter Football, they've had them up for like a year now, and the accuracy level and all that fun stuff. But you know what? It gets clicks. It gets people jazzed up about it, and we love that. Speaking of jazzed up, let's get people jazzed up about this 0-7 Twins team. As I introduce today's guest, you know him from Twins Daily. He is a founding partner, formerly had his own blog, and about four guys put their heads together, didn't suffer a concussion, and created Twins Daily. You can find him at Seth Tweets on Twitter. I'm joined by Seth Stowes, the pride of Pearl, Minnesota. Seth, how are we doing today?
I'm doing very well. I mean, a little bit better than our Twins are. And, you know, on a baseball podcast, it was kind of interesting hearing Andy mention the cup, because I think that means a very different thing in baseball than hockey.
Yeah, I think you're right. Especially, too, there is a level of intrigue for you and me. You living in Roro, me having grown up in Roseau, the natural rivalry there, and hockey and all that fun stuff too. But having played baseball, you and I have very different views of what a cup means and how important it is to our day-to-day business in the sport. If people know more about me, Seth, as far as fans, that's a mistake. But Seth, you know, maybe lay down your credentials as far as where Twins fans have read you over the past, we won't say too many number of years, but you've obviously been a very key part of the Twins blogosphere. Well, where have you been in the meantime, and where are you headed?
Well, I appreciate that. I started blogging at SethSpeaks.net, for any of those that remember that. I think way back in, I think, May of 2013. In 2012, along with Parker, Nick Nelson, and John Bonas, we started Twins Daily, and we've been writing there ever since. I did a few podcasts on the Twins and the minor leagues way back in the day, before podcasts became kind of a thing, and you guys have taken off from there and done wonderful things with them. But, yeah, I mean, I've done a little bit with StarTribune.com and other sites around the region, a few radio stations around the region. So I don't know if those are credentials as much as just definitely enjoy talking about the Twins and baseball in general.
And before we get too far down the road, there are a couple things, or a couple ways that listeners can help support the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. If you shop on Amazon, and I think everybody that I know does, you can go to coldomaha.com/Amazon. It will take you to the Amazon storefront. Nothing changes for your Amazon experience, whether you use Prime, whether you use Pantry, or any of their other great features, but we get a kickback of the sale that you finish with Amazon. Did a couple times. It's slick. You don't even have any idea that Big Brother Cold Omaha is watching. So if you shop at Amazon, click on over to Cold Omaha and click one of the banners, or just go to coldomaha.com/Amazon. You won't notice a difference, but we will be very happy that you did. Another thing to get on board with, and I'm sure people are going to laugh when they listen to this promo, but Ticket King has an April Twins promo with us on Midwest Swing. Promo code is SWING, and then you can get $10 off orders of $50 of Twins tickets. That's Twins tickets only. It's a very good discount, though, as much as 20% off. They have $7 tickets for days in the next couple days while supplies last. You will not find them anywhere else that are any cheaper. No fees. So unlike those big guys over at StubHub or anywhere else, no fees. They've got offices in each of the Twin Cities, keeping it local. There's a 100% guarantee you can buy with confidence. TicketKingOnline.com. Once more, that promo code is SWING, as in Midwest Swing, the podcast that you are listening to right now. And they'll make you very happy with your Twins tickets purchase. Come on out and support this team as they look for their first win, whether it's tonight, tomorrow, or hopefully not much longer than that. With that in mind, Seth, before we get to Twins start, news coming out today that Glenn Perkins is going on shelf with the disabled list. What's your first thought when you hear that?
Well, I mean, obviously it's not positive. We know he's been struggled and been hurt most of the second halves of the last 2 years. So for him to work, have stayed in Fort Myers and have worked as hard as he did this offseason, for it to happen and for him to be feeling the left shoulder strain a week into the season has to be frustrating for him. Honestly, my first reaction is to kind of feel bad for him. The second reaction is to hope that it's just a strain and, you know, a couple of weeks worth of DL time will get him back to 100%. But, you know, if I'm being honest, I certainly am a little more leery about the timeline and whether or not he'll, you know, be as productive this year as he has been really for the last 4 to 5, maybe even 6 years.
And, you know, obviously if it is a long-term thing for the Twins, that bullpen has been much maligned over the past couple of years. But I do think they've got some guys down in the minors, especially on the 40-man roster, but also if you have to dig a little deeper to patch it up. People obviously not very happy with how things have gone early in the season with this bullpen. What can you tell us, though, about the guy coming up right away, Taylor Rogers? Statistically, which is kind of my angle, this is a guy who has worked as a starter in the minors, but is a guy who absolutely crushed opposing left-handed hitters last year between AAA and the Arizona Fall League. Gave up like a 402 OPS to them, as far as I remember. What are we looking for from Taylor Rogers when he comes up?
Well, you never really know what you're going to get when a guy first comes up. Some guys, like Miguel Sano last year, come in and kind of take over a little bit. Other guys, like Byron Buxton or Aaron Hicks, it takes a little while, and it takes a few times up and down. So, you know, aside from the fact that you never know with a first-time Major League debut guy, Taylor Rogers is a long, tall, skinny guy, throws in the low 90s. Like you said, he's been a starter most of the time, but the numbers he put up last year, you mentioned the 402 OPS, but I think he gave up 3 extra base hits, and they were all doubles, you know, which is very few. I mean, these are Ryan O'Rourke-type numbers from the left side. So, you know, that's what he can do. You know, could he be a big league starter? 3-4 years ago at the Twins, he probably would have been making starts for them at that time. Right now, he's probably number 8 or 9 in line when it comes to starting pitchers, you know, and for the Twins. So moving him to the bullpen, especially with those left-handed numbers, makes a lot of sense.
Why do you suspect he was the first call-up or the first choice for the Twins, given, you know, O'Rourke's presence and that they have a couple other guys maybe that, you know, J.R. Graham that could fill in too, or you know, do they strictly want a lefty?
You know, I think the fact that it's Perkins going on the disabled list, I really felt that, you know, when I kind of heard that Rogers was coming up, my first assumption was that it was Perkins, just because then they would still have that second left-hander in the bullpen. We assume that Kevin Jepson will probably slide into the closer role at this point, as he did really well last year. I think if it would have been a right-hander, you'd probably see J.R. Graham first. Alex Meyer certainly had a first appearance in Rochester that we went 4 innings of shutout ball. He could have been in line as well. And I'll say that I think J.T. Chagua is right in that conversation as well, as far as guys that can come up very soon. He's faced 6 batters so far this year at Double-A and has struck out 5 of them swinging. So, you know, but, you know, O'Rourke certainly would have been a good option too, because he had a tremendous spring and he has, you know, half of a year of experience as well. So you couldn't go wrong with either one of them.
Now, when you say he throws in the low 90s, was that as a starter in longer duty last year? And you do expect maybe a little bit of a spike in velocity, or is low 90s where he lives kind of a Brian Dunsing style thing?
No, and I think Dunsing would be a good example of what he can be. You know, I mean, except Dunsing never quite had the lefty splits. Well, actually, he did, I think, early in his career.
They tailed off a little as he went on.
Right. I think, you know, Rogers is a guy who every year when I write the prospect handbook, I'd get different reports. You know, one year, I think it was in Fort Myers, I was hearing he was sitting 92 and hitting 94 late in games, whereas last year out of Rochester, we were hearing more 89 to 90, touching 91, 92. But out of the bullpen, we've seen this many times, that guys can usually add a couple miles per hour. So I think if he's working fully out of the bullpen, you know, he's a guy that I think will sit. He'll probably sit 90 to 92, but he'll be able to hit 94. But it's really his curveball slash slider that makes him so effective against left-handers.
Now, what do you suspect his role will be? Obviously, you know, the Twins are, for lack of a better way to put it, without a defined long guy. Ryan Pressly has kind of worked in that role. They had kind of expected Michael Tonkin to maybe do some of that too. Do you get the feeling that this could be a springboard for Pressly to move towards higher leverage innings, and maybe Rogers settling in if they need multiple innings from a guy maybe in the fourth, fifth, sixth inning? Or are they going to use him as a specialist? I mean, obviously this is guesswork, but from your point of view, what are you expecting from Rogers in terms of how Paul Molitor is going to use him early on?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't anticipate they're going to throw him into high leverage situations right away. I don't know that would be fair. And he hasn't really worked enough out of the bullpen, even in the minor leagues. He's had one appearance this year after being a starter for, you know, his entire career. I don't think they're going to just throw him right into that type of a role. That's where you can use Fernando Abad. I'm with you on Pressly. I think I tweeted right before the season started that I think Ryan Pressly will be their best relief pitcher this year. Now, I assume that with Jepson jumping into the ninth inning, we can assume that Trevor May is going to get most eighth innings unless he's pitched a few days in a row. But I think Pressly has certainly met and probably surpassed Casey Fien on the when to use radar. Sure. But I think Tonkin remains as that long guy, although certainly Rogers can go 3-4 innings if need be as well, if it makes sense for a particular game.
Now, you had teased working and doing some stuff with the Star Tribune, including now most recently you and I and Parker Hageman, your colleague at Twins Daily. Michael Rand reached out from the Star Tribune and had us each pan 100 or 200 words about the start and if we're panicking about it and the level of concern over the start. If you could paraphrase your short little blurb there, what would you say is your level of concern at this point over the 0-7 Twins?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, it's not ideal, I think would be the summary. It's obviously not where they want to be. I mean, 2-5 would at least look a little bit better. So, you know, the fact, and you wrote about it too, I saw in that article, that no team that started 0-7 has ever made the playoffs. Now, that's not necessarily fair, as you pointed out very well, that there have been teams that started 2-9 and others that have been 7 games under .500 and have made the playoffs, just not at 0-7. So there's plenty of time. I mean, 155 games is a long time. If they were 5 games back of the division leader in late July or even early August, I'd be more concerned. But right now I'm not terribly concerned because I do think they do have a high level of talent. I think the offense has to get better. You know, some of those guys are going to start hopefully warming up as the weather warms up. And I do think the starting pitching has been pretty good the first time and a half through the rotation. Not that you expect them to stay around that 4 ERA, but I think, you know, they're not pitching completely over their heads, and some guys can even get better. So I think the starting rotation gives you some pause for positivity, but the bullpen obviously has to be better. And I think they will be too, as long as they're healthy.
Yeah, and you know, when you cite stats from this time of season, it's not really a predictive thing. It's more of a this is what has happened kind of standpoint. And the Twins, as far as rotations coming into yesterday, were second in the AL and ERA, and I think that would stun a lot of people. I think only maybe Oakland was number one. But, you know, the starting pitching, for the most part, was doing their job. Nobody's really getting bombed, so to speak. I mean, Kyle Gibson's two starts have been so, they haven't been great. But at the same time, you know, Phil Hughes, who's going today against Carlos Rodon, had a really nice start in Baltimore and just ran into a little bit of trouble in the seventh inning, hit a wall. And honestly, you know, he had a shutout going until Manny Machado took him deep. I really think that, you know, there's enough talent and enough skill when you look at the offense, when you look at the pitching staff. Defensively, maybe a little shakier in certain spots, but it's just too skilled of a team to close up shop at this point and say, nope, this is going to be a 90-loss team. They're going to start that train going again. And so for me, you know, just it starts with one, whether it comes today against Verdun or, you know, at some point on this homestand. Because if they don't win by the end of this homestand, that's when you start sounding the whistles and start moving some pieces around. Now, people that follow you on Twitter, at Seth Tweets, know that you are by and large a positive guy. In fact, I think sometimes people even give you a little grief for that. So I want to put you on the spot. What is the most what is the most negative thing that you can say about this start?
Well, 0-7. It's hard to be positive on that. You know, I mean, the bullpen's been terrible for the most part, other than Fernando Abad and other than Ryan Pressly most of the time. And the offense has been horrible, other than Joe Mauer and Eduardo Escobar. You know, I mean, I don't think those are exactly positive. I think they're pretty honest comments at this point. But, you know, I always try to put it in, like you said, in proper perspective. You know, eventually Miguel Sano is going to stop trying to hit the ball 600 feet and be satisfied with hitting it 400 feet, you know. And I think as Twins fans, we'll be satisfied with that as well. So, you know, I don't tend to overreact a whole lot just because it is such a long season.
When I looked at the lineup about halfway through the opener, you look on the big board and 7 of the 9 players playing for the Twins on Monday were hitting below 200. So, you know, slow start, obviously the case for a lot of these guys. Whose slow start are you most concerned about, whether it's offense or pitching or whatever, to the point where you think, okay, yeah, obviously it's not a whole lot in terms of track record here, but maybe there's something more to be said for this guy that maybe he needs an adjustment here or there.
I think you could argue that there's two people like that. You know, I'm going to mention Byung-ho Park just because there is no real precedent there. I mean, yes, you can go to Jung-ho Kang last year and talk about how he struggled a little bit in the first half.
No, they protected him last year too, a lot.
Right, and you know, Gung never, he didn't strike out as much as Park did in Korea, and that strikeout rate is something that I just don't think I feel comfortable saying he's going to get it. I mean, he swung and missed too much over there to make me wonder if over here he's ever going to be able to take that. It's similar to the Adam Brett Walker situation that I know you and I have talked about many times and is kind of a, you know, polarizing type of topic for many people, because if he can't cut down the strikeouts, he can never really take that next step. I mean, he might peak at, you know, what Mark Reynolds is, which is not a terrible player by any means. It's just, you know, it's not necessarily what you're hoping for.
It's the not other Chris player, Davis.
Right, right. And, you know, the other player you do worry about, and I'm not worried at all long term, but, you know, is Byron Buxton and the fact that he is just not taking good swings. He is missing fastballs at 92 that are right down the middle of the plate. You know, I do think you see occasional improvement, and then the next day you get back to kind of wondering if he's ever going to do it. But long term, I'm not worried at all, you know, but it is taking a little longer than you'd like. But, you know, every prospect's different. If I've learned one thing over the last dozen years of following prospects, you just never know what you're going to get from player to player, no matter how high they're ranked or how, you know, there's so many guys that were never ranked at all who end up becoming very good players. So those are the two I'd name, I guess.
Yeah, for me, it would the one guy I'm kind of keeping an eye on is Eddie Rosario. Not for any glaring reason, obviously a very nice rookie season, but it just seems to me like the struggles at the plate, which, you know, in some respects may have been, you know, projectable or something you could see coming. But I feel like he's in some way taking those out to the field with him, making some plays where, you know, up against a wall or playing caroms that would have been just second nature to him last year. And it's just not quite as polished of a player. And so, you know, if it's a struggle getting to him a little bit, I don't know if maybe moving him down in the order to just kind of cool off a bit works. The other issue is, who do you move up? You can't have Joe Mauer and Eduardo Escobar hit 1-2 and then just have it kind of roll from there. I mean, I guess in theory you could, and Paul Molitor's kind of an innovator, so maybe he would do that. But Rosario's the one guy that just kind of sticks out to me where that's a guy who they want to see get going sooner rather than later due to his youth. He's got options. They do have Max Kepler, who's a really nice player that I think they'd want to get a look at. None of that is an indictment on how good Rosario was last year and can be in the future, but you know, there is some level of probably doubt in Rosario's mind of if they're going to let Kepler take some of his playing time. And so I'll be interested to see how Molitor handles that, especially with today's lineup, which, you know, will come out about 3:30. So enough about that negative business. You know, positive is kind of where you reside. What positives have you seen through the first seven games?
Well, real quickly, let me just touch on Rosario. He's another example of a guy that I think right now is just trying to do too much. He's diving for balls that he wouldn't have last year. He made a lot of, you know, had a lot of assists last year, and this year it's like he's trying to just do too much. Similar with Sano, similar with others. So as far as the positives, I mean, honestly, it starts with Joe Mauer, in my opinion, and the guy has been bashed so much over the last couple of years, and even longer if we go back to people whining and complaining about the lack of power. But he just seems to be seeing the ball better, and whether it's using glasses or whether it's just a small sample size, but he does seem to be seeing the ball better, taking more walks, seeing pitches well, and then driving the ball a little bit. So I just feel like whether that's the third year back from concussion or the sunglasses or whatever it is, he has been good to start with. The other one, obviously, like you said, is the offensive side of Eduardo Escobar. I mean, he's hit the ball. He's continued to hit a lot of doubles. His defense has been a little bit off so far, which I am not too worried about because he's always been very stable out there. So that's it. You know, obviously we can't ignore it because we've bashed him for the last 2 years. Ricky Nolasco had a terrific first start, clearly the best of the group. Phil Hughes, you mentioned earlier, if it wasn't for that rain delay, you kind of wonder what would have happened in that game. And again, I mentioned Fernando Abad's been good, as good as we could hope. And I believe in Ryan Pressly. So to me, those are the positives. And frankly, I'd like to think that things just can't get worse and have to get better. So maybe that's the optimistic spin, but you know, regression to the mean doesn't always have to be negative.
You know, my take is the team has enough moving parts to make it work. And that's, you know, if you have to send down Park, you can move Sano back to DH temporarily, put Kepler in the outfield. Arcia, if his bat comes around or if he shows a good effort level, you've got enough moving parts with skilled players who, even if their track record lately hasn't been good, they've done enough good things in the big leagues to justify a bit of rope. So you've got Kepler, who's a big league ready bat, who may not play much this time around, but you could go with him and give him a chance. You get Jorge Polanco up if you need an infielder or a guy who can take a good at bat. I think there's enough moving pieces and quality players on the 40-man roster, and maybe one of the more skilled 40-man rosters the Twins have had in recent memory, to the point where I just think there's too much skill to continue to play this poorly. Would you agree with that?
I do think there's a ton of talent. I do think there's a lot of guys that are very young and inexperienced when it comes to the big leagues. Obviously, Park isn't young, but he has very few obviously very few major league experience at this point. So I do think there's going to be some peaks where things are working well and they'll play off each other very well. But with young, inexperienced players, you're also going to have some valleys. And obviously, unfortunately, you're starting the season in a pretty big valley. So I'm not surprised, but at the same time, I agree. I mean, it's not only, you know, Polanco and Kepler, Arcia, but it's arms. You've got Barrios that's very close, and Duffy's in AAA. And whether we agree with that decision or not, I mean, that's two guys in AAA that are pretty good. And you know, you got even Pat Deans down there, who has had a year and a half of really good pitching. And then the bullpen, you know, we haven't even talked about that, but the Shaguas and Meyer and even Nick Birdie, I know, threw an inning of extended ball yesterday and felt good. So he should be back at some point here. And I just think the talent-wise, they're so young and so talented that there's going to be those valleys. But there are a lot of reasons for optimism.
I think it's funny to assess this and look at the average fan standpoint. And all these people have been clamoring for the kids the last few years. And basically the kids got the keys to start this season. And you're seeing what can happen when you've got some, you know, inexperience having to fight its way through adversity. And I just think it's funny that fans are ready to turn on this team when the team is giving them everything they've asked for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point. I think that, you know, the reason they're going to struggle from at sometimes is in part because they haven't really struggled through their minor leagues. That's the reason they're that young and made it to the big leagues. So, well, you know, it's going to take some failure.
You've got some guys too that have won, you know, league championships, whether it's with Doug Minkiewicz or that kind of thing. This is a bunch that's won, and they want to win again. They just need to figure out how to do it on the big league level.
Yeah, and you know, what's going to make them successful over time is understanding that baseball, right or wrong, is a game of failure. And, you know, they used to say getting out 7 out of 10 times and you can be an all-star. Well, you know, now I think us more, well, more statistically inclined would say that, well, you get out 4 out of 10 times and you're really good, you know, that kind of thing. But, yeah. You know, I mean, I think it's just they need some of those data points of failure to realize that, you know, they have to keep working and it's not just going to be handed to them. And at the same time, hopefully the Tom Bernanskis and Neil Allen and Paul Molitor will keep their focus on improving while at the same time making sure that they're not, you know, mentally getting down so much that it's going to be hard to come back from too.
I suspect I know this answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's your confidence level in Paul Molitor to get these guys motivated?
You know, I don't know yet. I mean, I feel like last year he was able to, I think with a lot of help from Torrey Hunter, I think that people don't give Hunter necessarily the credit that he probably deserves, and others probably give him too much. But I think Molitor deserves a lot for helping them get out of that 1-6 start last year. But, you know, you mentioned him being more innovative and creative and statistically inclined. But, you know, to that point, I don't know that other than a little bit of shifting here and there that we've really seen that. So I guess I'm one that believes that the manager can help in the clubhouse and obviously doing some other things. But, I mean, we're seeing so much bunting and hitting and running and things like that. You just trying to steal bases. That you just kind of wonder if they're just trying to do too much, and that includes the manager trying to make things happen rather than just letting things happen. So, I mean, I'm kind of 50-50 on Molitor right now.
Quite frankly, so am I. Because
that was kind of negative for me, though.
Well, yeah, for you especially. Quite frankly, I'm in the same boat. I think he's a great baseball man. I think he does a lot of great things for the team, has a lot of experience to fall back on. You know, he doesn't like to talk about himself as a player, but I'm sure that's – you know, it obviously shapes and forms how he views the game. But then you see him bring the infield in a 0-0 game. It was in the first or second inning of the home opener. And it's just like, you know, is that really your level of confidence in this team that you don't think you can allow one run, you know, when the other team is the White Sox? You know, not a team that's going to for sure stymie you. Jose Quintana is a very nice pitcher, but he's not a Chris Sale one and done, you know, like a vintage Randy Johnson or anything like that. You can give up a run and still have a chance against Quintana. You know, obviously they owned Chris Sale last year, but when Chris Sale's at his best, you know, you need to give up one or two runs to have a really good chance to beat him on a given day. I just thought that was a bizarre decision. And it's small things like that, or, you know, lifting Miguel Sano in right field with a chance to come back up later in the game. You know, you just get a vibe where it's like, yeah, you know, some things Molitor does really like, and some of them it's kind of like, I don't think I would have done that.
And I'm not seeing enough difference between him and Gardenhire on the field or as a field manager. Off the field, I think you would agree, and we both know that they're very different. But on the field, I don't think we're seeing a lot of the differences. But I think to this point, we've been okay in saying that, you know, it's Molitor. He's got his reasons. And I'm one who definitely believes managers shouldn't go by stats all the time, that gut feel and knowing how guys are doing on a certain day has to come into that as well. So I'm not as big on the whole managerial person himself making a huge difference, but I think the biggest thing right now is helping them get out of this slide.
Now, does a manager matter more for a team that's young like this? You know, I know people rave about Joe Maddon. Obviously, he's got a very gifted roster in Chicago. He's had very good rosters in Tampa Bay, but he might have squeezed more marginal wins, you know, stolen a win here or there by batting a guy third against lefties when he'd usually hit seventh against righties, all that kind of stuff. But I think it could matter a little more with younger guys, and maybe that's where it comes into play is, you know, if you can lead younger guys that need reassuring in tough times. You know, that might be a place where statistical people might, you know, if they're shrugging off the value of a manager, it might be a little bit more valuable in that situation.
Yeah, and let's not forget that Molitor, before last year, had been working in the Twins farm system for, I think, a decade before that. So he worked a lot with Sano and Rosario and Kepler and Polanco and
those
and
guys loved him. Wave.
And yeah, and you know, even Dozier raved about him. You know, when I talked to him a few years ago, and I mean, this is before he even was in the big leagues. They raved about him and the things.
Wasn't he instrumental in moving Dozier from short to second and handling that? I thought I remember that being the case.
Yeah, you know, I know that the year that happened, the offseason that happened, Dozier actually spent some time in Minneapolis or in Minnesota working out with Molitor on playing second base, I think at the University of Minnesota, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, he was definitely instrumental in that. And it's just the confidence that they have in him. And obviously the fact that he's a Hall of Famer who has played different positions and ended up DHing and understands the mental side of the game, you know, has understood being hurt and coming back from these things and understands the big picture. I think at the end of the day, that can't hurt.
Well, he's a model of perseverance in a number of ways. You're also talking about a guy who dealt with drug issues early in his career, injuries, having to DH when he wanted to play the field. Like all those things you mentioned, he's gone through a lot of the battles and emerged as a Hall of Famer. That's a great point and a good reason why I think he's a good leader of men for a number of reasons. Moving forward towards tonight, Phil Hughes, Carlos Rodon at Target Field. I'll be there covering it. What are you looking for from Phil Hughes tonight? I think, you know, you look to some of your higher paid guys to be a stopper. I think Brad Radke was that back in the early part of his career when he kind of took the leadership role. Are you looking for him to be a stopper of a streak? Are you looking for something specific out of him when he takes on the Whiteys tonight?
Well, certainly we want him to stop the streak.
Sure.
But, you know, unless he throws a shutout, which, you know, he just throws so many strikes, it's hard to envision a whole lot of shutouts when he's pitching. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much control he has to have on that. But, you know, again, if he can keep the ball in the ballpark, he's going to give the team a chance. I don't think the White Sox lineup is, you know, going to be a league-leading type of offense. So I think if he can throw strikes and mix it up. You know, he was so great in 2014, and he was definitely hurt and not good last year. But if he can be somewhere in the middle, I think we should be happy. And from game to game, it's hard to know how that's going to play out. But you'd like to think he can work seven innings and give up two runs or less. That would be ideal, because you'd like to think, you know, hopefully most times out, that's going to be enough to give you a chance to win. But, you know, obviously for them to win, they're going to have to score a couple runs off the young kid that's a pretty good pitcher too.
Yeah, he showed me a lot against Baltimore, Phil Hughes did, not giving up home runs to that thunderous lineup until Manny Machado. And again, you know, you give up a home run to Manny Machado, that's defensible. That's one of the best young hitters in the game. But held down Chris Davis, Mark Trumbo, Pedro Alvarez, you know, a very thunderous lineup, gave up one home run against them. Chicago's got a couple thumpers too, Jose Abreu and Todd Frazier, especially in the middle of that order. So I look for him to get back on track, and maybe the Twins can steal that first win tonight. When you assess the rest of the division, the Twins have now played two of the other four teams. How good is the rest of this division in terms of talent? Obviously, the Royals coming off winning the World Series and with virtually the same roster from last year are going to be on the tips of everyone's tongue. But when you assess the AL Central on the whole, what do you see?
I mean, in my opinion, the Royals are the cream of the crop, and it's not particularly close, in my opinion. They brought most of their guys back. I don't think their starting rotation is great. I also don't think it's as bad as some people want to say it is either. I think Cleveland has the top three starting pitchers that are all hard throwing, you know, get good movement. I think Kluber, Carrasco, and
Salazar.
Danny Salazar. Yep. Those three, I think, can compete with any three in the division and any three probably in the American League. So to me, with those three, they're pretty set. And when you've got Kipnis and, you know, Lindor and some of those guys, you're going to have a pretty decent team. And when Brantley comes back, they'll be better. The Tigers simply just, you know, with their owner wanting to win, they're not going to do probably what they want and should do. But I think they'll struggle, but they're good enough that they can beat any team on any given night. And frankly, I don't think the White Sox are a team that are going to compete, but when you've got Sale and Rodon at the top of your rotation, again, you're going to have a chance. So, and with Frazier and Abreu, like you mentioned, and some of the other names they've added, they made a lot of changes this year. I think they've got a chance to be, you know, competitive. And all five teams, I think, can be 500 or better. But I see the Royals as far and away the best.
And it's a narrow lens that I'm going to ask you from, but Twins are 0-7. What has been your impression of their opponents so far? Baltimore still hasn't lost, came back with two J.J. Hardy home runs. How's that for a familiar name? To beat the Red Sox, they hung a three spot on Craig Kimbrell the other night. That's only the second time in like 500 and some big league appearances he's allowed more than two earned runs. So they're kind of a team that's maybe a team of destiny right now. Again, it's way too early to put that kind of label on anybody right now. But you've seen the Orioles, you've seen the Royals, and you've seen the very little of the White Sox too. Maybe part of the 0-7 start is that the Twins have scuffled, but they've also faced formidable competition. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, they have. I mean, I think there's enough pop in that Baltimore lineup, but I also think just with baseball, weird things happen. I mean, Joey Rickard for Baltimore just had an incredible series. He just got hit after hit. Sometimes they were on 0-2 and they... Right, and they were bloopers, and he's not a prospect. I mean, there's a reason he wasn't put on the 40-man roster of the Rays. So,
right.
I mean, at some point he'll probably come down to earth. But, you know, I mean, just their pitching isn't as bad as people think. Chris Tillman had a tough year last year, but the 2 years before that he averaged over a strikeout per inning. So, I mean, he's pretty decent. Giovanni Gallardo isn't going to strike out a ton, but he's a veteran who's just gotten the job done, and he's still around because he's still a pretty good pitcher. He was good in Texas last year. So, I mean, I think sometimes we as fans may not recognize people as all-stars, but we forget that they're all in the big leagues for a reason. And, you know, Ian Kennedy's another guy who's been better than people think for a long time. Would we have wanted to give him the contract that Kansas City gave him? Probably not, but, I mean, he's a pretty good pitcher, and that lineup is so much fun to watch, in my opinion. I know I say that as a Twins guy, but... I mean, I just love the way they battle at the plate and don't strike out and make the defense make plays, and then they play just tremendous defense that I think they're fun to watch, too.
The Royals have done a thing where they've propped up the pitchers that they've signed and made them into even better guys, whether it's Jason Vargas or Chris Young or even now Chris Medlin. If they do that for Ian Kennedy, they're going to have an ace at a reduced price, which is going to be hilarious if that happens. You're talking about a guy over the last couple of years that more than a strikeout per inning, not a great ERA, but you know he's got the components there that if you put a good defense behind him and he strikes out a batter per inning, if they have created an ace out of thin air, that goes from a laughable contract to GMs are going to start wanting to copy what they're doing. And you know you see that too in other places. Baltimore's got the shaky rotation or shaky-ish rotation, lockdown bullpen. Good luck trying to elevate a baseball against Britain in the ninth. And so, you know, that might be the new wave of the future is, you know, maybe you focus your efforts on power relievers. And I think the Twins have started to do that and have tried to do that, and it's coming along. But
that's the plan.
Yeah, they faced some pretty good teams so far. I mean, Chicago, they could have beaten Chicago and whatever. But Baltimore and Kansas City, they're going to be two teams that I think are around for most of the year.
Yeah, you know, I think, like you said, you mentioned, you know, you look at Baltimore's bullpen with Zach Britton, but Darren O'Day and Brad Brock and Michael Givens, and these aren't household names, but when you watch them pitch and you see the angles they're throwing from and the velocity they're getting, you understand why that philosophy is there. And the Twins kind of started that really in that 2012 draft and have since of getting those power arms. And you know, if a couple of them turn into starters like Tyler Duffy, that'd be a bonus. But if you can make a game a 5 or 6 inning game and then go to a dominant bullpen, honestly, I think that's the biggest reason why offense has been down so much the last couple of years is because bullpens and situational bullpen usage, it makes it really hard to be a good hitter in the big leagues.
Especially late in the game, yeah, that's obviously true. Well, we got just a few minutes left with you before you got to get back to where you're headed, but... I would be remiss if we didn't talk farm system because that's obviously your niche, your specialty at Twins Daily. So what of the farm system teams in the Minnesota Twins farm system are you most excited about? Again, I think I know the angle you're going to go here, but feel free to surprise me.
You know, this year there isn't that roster that jumps out with prospects, but to start the season, I think it has to be Rochester. Even now that Taylor Rogers and Max Kepler are up, you still have Jorge Polanco, and you've got J.O. Barrios and Duffy and Adam Brett Walker, although he's got an oblique right now, so he's going to miss a little bit of time. So to me, that's it. But some of that team, 19 players are back from that Chattanooga team that won the Southern League title last year, and that's Double A, including, you know, guys like Harrison and Birdie and Shagwa, and some of those guys are all going to be there as well. So to me, the upper levels is where the prospects are. Offensively, obviously, though, there isn't as much other than maybe Nick Gordon in the lower levels. But I think where you think I'm going to go with this answer is absolutely where I'm going to go with this answer, and that's the six-man starting staff of the Fort Myers Miracle, which could be just absolutely dominant, and we'll see how long they stay there.
Well, what team then do you think is going to have the best record? Now, there's some nuance to that question because guys move up. Chattanooga, all those guys you listed are probably future big leaguers in some form or fashion, but trying to project them to have a good season all staying together is tough because a lot of those guys can go up to AAA or, you know, in a rare case, jump straight to the big leagues. But do you have a team that you think is going to have, like, the best winning percentage at the end of the season in terms of Twins farm teams?
Boy. You know what? I think I'm going to go with that Fort Myers team because of that starting staff. And I'll just mention them real quick. You've got Steven Gonsalves, Cole Stewart, Tyler Jay, Felix Jorge, Keaton Steele, and the one that I'm missing is Randy Rosario, had a no-hitter into the sixth inning in his first start last night. I think that although a couple of those guys will move up, I think maybe four or even five of them will probably spend the entire year in Fort Myers, which will give them a chance in any two or three or a three or five-game series. So I think that they're going to have the best record. You know, Chattanooga right now is off to a 1-5 start, and, you know, Rochester, you never really know because you never know who's getting called up, but you've always got veterans there who've been around that actually help in that winning. So, but I'll stick with Fort Myers.
What's your level of excitement for that rotation with the Miracle?
I mean, very excited because, you know, having been down in Fort Myers for a week of spring training and seeing them pitching games, I mean, Gonsalves is a guy who took off last year. Cole Stewart, I think the best thing they did for him was letting him repeat at high A. And maybe he moves up, and even in his first start, he had some strikeouts and got out of some tough situations. Watching Tyler Jay, he's not a big guy, but you see how the ball just explodes out of his arm. I've seen Felix Jorge pitch quite a bit, and the fact that he's hitting 94 now, throws a ton of strikes on the athlete that he is. And I think Randy Rosario has the potential to be the best of all of them, which is saying a lot. He's back for his first full year since Tommy John surgery, and I think he's got the ability to not only throw 94 to 96, but work in a really good slider and changeup. I mean, you've got five guys there who could be top 10 Twins prospects by next year.
What is your realistic expectation for Cole Stewart this year, and do you have him or Gonsalves higher on your personal prospect list?
I have Gonsalves a little bit higher because, you know, I know that he just knows the IQ. He's got just such a high baseball IQ. He knows how to pitch. He gets the nuances of pitching. And he has some pretty good stuff. Stewart probably has a higher overall ceiling in terms of stuff. But obviously the strikeouts were a concern last year, which is why I think that he is starting back in Fort Myers, but I can see that a situation where he might be the first guy called up because of his, you know, maybe in June or July and kind of taking off from there. So I think that's what's going to happen. I think he would be the one that gets moved up first.
We get a lot of the last few years, when is this guy coming up? When is this guy coming up? When is this guy coming up? That's not going to be any quieter this year with Jose Barrios. What is your timeline for him to debut with the Minnesota Twins? Again, you know, I hate when people ask this because a guy like you or a guy like me doesn't quote-unquote know. We just have semi-educated guesses. But I still have to ask because right, people want to know what you think.
I mean, the fact that Duffy's down there means in my mind that if there was a need, if there was an injury to a starter in the first month of the season, that Duffy would be the first one called up. But I think that once you get past 3 weeks or maybe 4 or 5 starts into a season – So probably early to mid-May. It totally at AAA goes by who's ready and who's ready to get people out. And at that point, you know, I think it's a toss-up of which one of those two would be more ready. So I think Berríos could be ready by mid-May. I think he'll come up right after June, hopefully. Again, hopefully the starters for the Twins are pitching well and it's a non-topic, but I think they get him up by June. Duffy, I think, could be up a little bit earlier.
How much does 40-man play into that, too, 40-man status in terms of Duffy being on and Berríos being off?
You know, it is a factor, and I don't think people like that it's a factor, but it is the 40-man roster spots are really valuable to an organization, and they have to take care of them. If they're both pitching pretty much equally well, then I think Duffy gets the call. I mean, and that's whether it's totally 40-man or just age or inexperience, it's probably the right thing. That said, Berríos has the ability. If he gets his command down, he can be dominant. So they may just go right to him.
How do you say Mr. Vilma's first name? And what is his future role for this team?
Well, it starts as if it's O-N, so it's Angelb. And some say the B, others don't, but I think it's Angelb Vilma. His future is really going to depend on if he can hit 280 or 270 at any level. I was told by one person that if he can hit 260 at Chattanooga this year, he could be the opening day shortstop next year because his defense is that good. So he's very small. He's about 6 foot and probably about 155 pounds. So there's not a lot of pop there. But if he can hit for average, even 280, his defense will make him very valuable.
Last question before I let you go, but Vilma probably plays into this. Who's your prospect that you like the most that you don't feel like anybody's talking about right now?
And, you know, I don't think people are talking about Travis Harrison for a couple of reasons. One, he hasn't put up those types of numbers, but he is a first-round pick, and I still believe he's got a ton of power potential. Another one people are kind of talking about, whether it's too early or not, is Lamont Wade down in Cedar Rapids. He's got such a good plate discipline and approach at the plate and willingness to take walks and walks more than he strikes out, as well as having some pop in his bat, not really having a weakness in his game. He's a guy that I think could move up at least one and, you know, even maybe two levels in this season.
I can think of just one word to close this podcast out with, and I bet you know what it is. Wow.
Wow.
Thanks.
That's a great word.
That's a great word. Thank you for joining me today, Seth. We got to get you back to work. We got to get people back to work. I got to get to work. So, again, thank you for Seth from – excuse me. Let me start over there. Thank you for joining us, Seth Stoes, at Seth Tweets on Twitter. Find his work on Twins Daily. I can tell you that next week we will be joined again by Matt Trueblood of Baseball Prospectus. Got a very big show lined up with him. So, again, thank you for joining us on Midwest Swing, episode number 15. Check us out on iTunes and on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hello, my name is Zachary Bennett.
And this is Tim Fakeless.
And we are your co-hosts for the Wolves Wired podcast. Be sure to tune in to the Wolves Wired podcast on Monday mornings. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Now back to your regular programming.
Hey, kiddies. It sucks that football season's over, but brand new, exciting development on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. New show, the Andy, Luke, and Reef Football Machine is kicking off. Pardon the pun. We got Luke Inman of eDraft. He's got his draft prowess and player development side. We got Arif Hassan of Everywhere. He's talking analytics and the thinking man side of the game. And we got me, Andy Carlson, who is also a person. Yeah. Show's available on iTunes, Stitcher, and of course, coldomaha.com/footballmachine, a part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network, baby. Let's go.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of coldomaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out coldomaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@coldomaha.com or follow us on Twitter @coldomahamn.
the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.